The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Today is the end of the two-week retreat that I teach every September in Hidden Villa. And it's a wonderful retreat. This year is about 26 people who have, you know, doing this retreat. It's kind of an intensive, silent Vipassana retreat. And today's the last day, so it closes today. So we start the closing thing at 11:30, so or so when I arrive. So it means that when I finish here talking, I'm not going to linger and stay for the potluck. I have to leave pretty promptly to go to the retreat. And so the whole experience of the retreat is very much on my mind, on my heart. It was a beautiful thing to be part of and beautiful to watch people go through it. And when people engage in meditation practice, whether it's daily meditation practice or on retreat, there's a variety of different functions, psychological, psychophysical functions that come into play. And sometimes people will kind of focus on only one function, or one quality that gets developed. They're really meant to come together as a whole. And today, what I'd like to do is spend a little bit of time talking about tranquility as one of the factors. But I want to mention that tranquility exists together with these other qualities, faculties that come into play when we meditate. And so there are considered to be sometimes, it's one list, three energizing faculties that need to be energized appropriately when on practice. It said that investigation, looking more deeply at your experience, is one of the energizing factors. Joy is an energizing factor, and then energy itself, applying oneself, engaging, putting energy, having energy for the practice. And then the tranquilizing factors are things like tranquility itself, concentration or samadhi, and equanimity. And so those have to come into balance. If you're too tranquil, you probably just go to sleep. If you have too much energy, you'll spend your time spinning in discursive thought, being agitated. And so the idea is to bring those two in balance. And when you do that, both of them can actually become quite strong. Our capacity for deep penetrating investigation, deep penetrating observing of our life is quite phenomenal, that what can happen in meditation and on retreats. The capacity of our human minds to really see deeply is a beautiful, beautiful thing that's usually not so easy in daily life, because our mind is usually agitated or involved in a variety of thinkings and concerns. And so, but to really have that strong is really beautiful. It's beautiful to have joy. And certainly it can be a lot of joy available in daily life. But there's something different about meditative joy than most people's idea of joy, because for most people, I believe, joy or happiness comes from having the conditions of the world just right. And whereas meditative joy is something that doesn't require anything from the world outside of us, stimulated in a particular way, happy events, but rather it's something that wells up from inside. And so the level of joy on retreat can be quite strong, so much so that sometimes people report that it gets intense, the joy. Energy also, it isn't that we're supposed to have this agitated, you know, energy on retreat, but there's something very, as the energy or capacity to apply ourselves develops on retreat, the energy becomes clean, becomes like this, almost like in East Asia they talk about qi or ki. This qi kind of gets awakened, and this beautiful upwelling sense of aliveness or vitality can be there that is not agitated, but often sometimes cleaner or more vital than the kind of energy you'd get from a good donut or good donut or donut and coffee. And on the other hand, we have this beautiful capacity for equanimity. Equanimity is considered one of the crown jewels of Buddhist practice. And it's not meant to be aloofness or indifference, but rather this beautiful ability to be intimately present for our experience without reacting to it. It's kind of like, without getting ruffled whatsoever. And so it's a kind of beautiful quality to just kind of feel and be intimate and experience things and not feel your mind going for or against your experience. Concentration also, it's beautiful to be collected, to be centered, to have the mind and the heart be really steady in a strong way. Often our life is, so scattered, we're doing so many different things. It's hard for us to really come together and have everything steadied or unified the way we can in meditation. So then the last factor is this tranquility factor. When all these other factors are there, so maybe you can imagine that there's a strong penetrating ability to see, there's a really good clean qi or energy alive and present, a strong sense of vitality, there is joy, and with that, at the same time, there's a deep sense of tranquility, of calmness. Not a calmness that just kind of, everything else kind of fades away and just kind of like just, a couch potato blob, but something that feels really vital and alive. You can have a tremendous amount of calmness while engaged in activity. I don't know if you've ever seen an athlete, like a runner, for example, maybe putting a lot of effort into the run, but you get a sense, you look and see the elegance of the moves, and there's something very calm also about how the person's engaged in applying all this energy. So calmness or tranquility is an important part of this practice. And the Buddha emphasized it both in these kinds of lists that describe the ecology of the mind and what comes into play when we meditate. But he also described it or instructed it very clearly in some of the instructions he gave in meditation practice. That part of meditation practice, he encouraged us, is actually focus on relaxing the places in our body in our mind that are tense or agitated. And a lot of people associate meditation with becoming calm. And some people even their doctors prescribe it. That, you better. you're going to have a heart attack soon if you don't, or your blood pressure is a bit high. So I think it's good if you calm down. And here, why don't you try the meditation? So it's known to have that effect. Sometimes people will make too much effort to get calm and get attached or get too hold on to the idea that calm is the be-all and end-all meditation. It's not meant to be the end-all of meditation, but it's a very important factor, which enough meditators forget, and especially on retreat, where you do find people who strive too much. They bear down, they're trying so hard, they're so sincere and so dedicated, and they're trying so hard to get concentrated or be mindful or something. And I find this particularly true for people who focus mostly on concentration in meditation. They have this idea that concentration is kind of a tightening up of the focus. And so they kind of tighten up. Sometimes you actually see it in their brows. They get all bunched up. They're kind of trying so hard to look and be kind of zero in on something like a laser. And rather than getting, it's possible to get concentrated that way, but the concentration usually is not very useful. It tends to be more brittle. The concentration that we're looking for in Buddhist practice, ideally, is a concentration that's very soft, broad, where the mind, the awareness, gets a feeling of becoming expansive rather than becoming kind of tight and brittle and hard. And so the art of meditation is to learn how to develop both concentration and mindfulness while also learning to appropriately relax, or how to bring into balance the energizing factors and the relaxing factors. So today, the focus is on, tranquility. So in one of the places where the Buddha described meditation practice is in a particular list called the 16 steps of breathing mindfully. And he begins this process of using the breath as a focus for meditation practice by encouraging us first or instructing us first just to tune into your breathing. Get to know your breathing. Get familiar with it. Notice the qualities of it. Is it long, your breaths? Are they short, your breaths? You can add to that, is your breath fast, slow, shallow, deep? What part of your body moves? What are the sensations? Is the breath smooth or is it choppy? What goes on in your breath? And the instructions are simply to know it as it is. And that's a very important instruction because it doesn't say judge it. It doesn't say judge yourself because of it. It just says this beautiful quality, just know it. So the beginning is just to kind of enter into this kind of simple knowing of your experience of your breathing. Then while you're breathing at some point, the instructions is to become, stay with your breath at the center, but also broaden your range of your attention to be know what's going on in your body. Are you tense? Are you relaxed? Are you hunched over? What's happening in your body as you stay with the breath? Don't get lost so much in the breath that you don't know. Because the body is a great teacher that can teach us what we're doing as we're meditating. If we're not making enough effort, you might be slumped over. And it's not useful to be slumped over when you meditate. You need to sit up and have some energy there. But you might also notice that your body's getting tense as you meditate because you're trying too much. Or you might notice that there's tension in your body from how you live your daily life. And so it's good to start noticing what's going on in your body. Become familiar with it. So you keep breathing, but you kind of breathe with your body, noticing what's in your body. And then comes the crucial step. It says once you kind of have done a simple, non-reactive observation, checking in with yourself, noticing how it is, then the instructions are to relax your body. Or more specifically, and this is important, it doesn't say relax the body. The technical word is relax the bodily formations. The formations, as the word is, sankhara. And this is a very interesting word. The sankhara refers to the volitional activity of the mind. So that part of those activities in the mind, which when the mind is active, it's thinking things, wanting things, not wanting things, resisting things. The mind's involved, you know, most of the time with wanting, not wanting, doing something, having a lot of energy for some concern. The volitional activity of the mind can have an effect on the body. So, you know, if I'm always worrying, that's a mental activity. And that worry can translate to my shoulders being tense. If I'm always angry, maybe there's a fire in the pit of my belly, and so there's this kind of tension that's there. And when you sit down to meditate, you feel the tension there. So there's a lot of different... what goes on in the mind can have an effect on the body. The bodily formations is that those bodily experiences you can have, those sensations you can have of your body, that are there because of what you've done with your mind. So, you know, if a fly lands on your cheek, you know, that's just a fly, you know, itching, you know, crawling around. But if you have a headache, it's possible that your headache is there because you've been really tense at work, focusing on the computer, trying so hard, you know, to do something. And so, you know, the fly is more neutral in terms of what you do. The headache is something that your mind has contributed to. A lot, it turns out, at least in Buddhist psychology, the teaching is that a lot of what we experience as our body, not the way we think about it, but from the inside out, with the sensations you feel in your body, are there because, one way or other, because of these volitional formations that we have. So as we tune into our body, get aware of it, breathe with it, then the instructions is to relax the bodily formations. Tranquilize them, calm them. Calm them down. So if you feel tension in your shoulders, then perhaps you can relax your shoulders a little bit. Sometimes the tension in the shoulders is not easy to relax. It's kind of locked in. Then I find it useful to, rather than relaxing them, soften around the tension. Just soften, like kind of have a sense of softening or opening, or For some people, maybe it's a sense of acceptance. Maybe we can't relax it, but we can accept it. And that accepting awareness does something, as opposed to being critical or against it or upset because it's there. Just kind of create some space around it. Same thing with the belly, the face. It's really useful to pay attention to what you do around your eyes. There's a lot of people who, not everyone, but there's a fair number of people whose intensity around how they're going to, what they want in the world, is channeled through their eyes. They're looking. It's almost like in ancient psychology, they believed that something about the eyes would reach out and grab the object that it looked at. And now we know that, you know, light just passively bounces in when we keep our eyes open, and we register that and interpret it in some way as what we see. And so we don't take responsibility anymore, like they used to. But in fact, I think often, you know, some people, you know, you can see they're trying so hard, they're looking and trying to pick things up. And a great instruction in meditation is to relax the back of your eyes. For some people, having your eyes relax back in their sockets. So we're not trying. So to relax the body, while at the same time keeping the body upright. This combination of having energy and uprightness and relaxation. I read a study many years ago of what human postures allowed people to relax, physically relax the most deeply. And apparently the number one was lying on your back flat. But that's conducive to falling asleep. The number two, it was sitting cross-legged. That sitting cross-legged, like on the floor, I mean, if you can do it. If you can't do it, it's not relaxing. But if you can do it, it's a posture that is very stable. It has this tripod effect of the knees and the butt. And the body's upright, and it can align the spine, if you do it right, align it just right, that very little of a musculature is needed for holding yourselves up. And it allows for some deep relaxation. Deeper than if you sit in a couch, leaning against the backrest of the couch. You'd think that sitting on the couch lets the deepest relaxation occur. But there's something about the aligned posture of sitting upright that allows something deep inside to let go. So to focus a little bit, not a lot, but, you know, on staying relaxed in your body is very, very useful for meditation practice. So then, as these instructions from the Buddha continue, he talks about experiencing joy. And there's an interesting connection between joy and relaxing the body. If your body is tense, you know, the muscles are tight, you have a very particular way in which the body's experienced. Usually when the body is tense, it feels pretty solid. And the boundaries of the body tend to be much more distinct. When the tension relaxes, the boundaries of that area become softer and more diffuse. When we relax, it feels less solid, feels lighter, more open. It would maybe be like if you really made a really tight fist in your hand, you would feel that the boundaries of the tightness, the solidity of it. You'd feel maybe the inside of your palm, the fingers, kind of, you know, and your focus would be kind of hard. That's what you feel when you make a good fist, feel a lot of hardness. But if you relax that, you'd feel, you know, partly the blood would flow into your fingers perhaps, but you'd feel kind of this more open feeling, lighter feeling, very quickly. And if you held yourself a long time tense, and you relax the fist, it feels kind of a nice, light, refreshing energy, I think. Something like that happens in your hand as it opens up. The same thing happens in our body, that as we begin relaxing the body, the sense of the body being solid and with firm boundaries begins to relax as well. And the body begins to feel more open. There's a kind of a release of a certain kind of energy in the body. That can't be released when everything is held tight. Maybe it's kind of like your energy is all bound up and being tense, and when you relax, the energy gets freed and it flows more freely in the body. Maybe it's a little bit like that. So as the body relaxes, the body starts feeling better. And that feeling of betterness in the body sometimes is associated with joy or lightening or delight or a sense of well-being that can happen. And the instructions at this point is experience it, which I interpret to be appreciate it. It's a good thing. Meditation is not supposed to be a grim task, a serious duty. I think that meditation is really an important thing. It's like one of the more important things I do in my life, I feel. But it's very important not to take it too seriously, because then you're in trouble. So feel the joy, feel the delight. You know, if you are feeling the effect of being present in your body, being here and now, and relaxing. Then the instructions are, is to now keep breathing, stay with your breath, but now open your attention, now that your body's a little more settled, open your attention up a little bit wider to become aware of the mental formations, these mental sankharas. So now the volitional activity of your mind, the mental processes of your mind, what's going on in your mind? And this, I think it's more than just realizing what you're thinking about. It's more like realizing how the mind how the mind operates when it's thinking. What are the activities of the mind like when the mind is thinking or concerned about things? So the mind, you can feel sometimes the mind is tense, or the mind is relaxed. You can feel that there's a lot of energy swirling around, jumping around. You can feel the mind jumping. You can feel that there's a tremendous intensity sometimes in certain concerns. It's one thing to have a concern. It's another thing, the intensity with which we're interested in the concern. And here, at this stage, it's very helpful to begin appreciating that we're trying to settle the mind or quiet down the discursive thinking layer of the mind. It's like there's different layers of thinking that the mind can do. And one of the coarsest layer of thinking is sometimes called discursive thinking, which we're having a discourse. I guess that's why they use the term. But there's like conversational thinking that goes on in the mind. You're repeating a conversation you had with someone, or you imagine you're telling something to someone, or you're telling something to yourself, or you're making commentary about things, or judging things, or planning the future, or remembering the past, or fantasizing about something. It's quite involved. It's complex. It usually has nothing to do with what's happening here. And that level of thinking can be done calmly, but also can be done with a lot of intensity. And so, as we start feeling the activity of the mind, is the mind tense? Is it brittle? Is it tight? Is it open? Is it relaxed? What's going on in the mind? If we notice that these mental formations, the mental activity of the mind, is agitated, restless, tight, tense, then the instructions are calm it down. Relax. Let it become more tranquil. Now, sometimes that can be done just telling yourself to do. Sometimes. You know, calm down, Gil. You don't have to think about that. And sometimes it can be done by feeling into where the tension and tightness is, where the energy or the pressure is. There can be a sense of pressure sometimes behind the mental activity. And to feel the pressure, feel the tension in the mind or wherever your mind happens to manifest physically, and then relax, soften it. I find it helpful to do that on the out-breath, kind of a letting go with exhaling. And so as you exhale, see if you can let the mind settle. Some people, it's helpful to have an image, and the image is that I like is that of a surface of a lake. And that surface of the lake, maybe it's all choppy with the wind and all that. And as the wind settles down, the lake becomes flatter and flatter and calmer and calmer. The surface becomes, you know, mirror-like. And I like this image from my mind, at least, because as I relax my mind, it's like my mind becomes broader and flatter. It spreads out. A tight mind, an anxious mind, tends to be claustrophobic and narrow. A mindful mind, a concentrated mind, tends to become soft and expansive and open. And so the instructions here are to begin softening, relaxing. The instructions are not to let go, because letting go is a taller order, means kind of you put something down. But here it's moving in the direction of calming oneself down. It's kind of like that happens in a graded way. We slowly, over time, can relax. And I think people who meditate regularly will find that the process of meditating over 45 minutes, that there's often a slow, gradual movement towards becoming more relaxed. And there might not be any clear moment of suddenly being more relaxed, but slowly, we get more settled, more calm, and all that. So, giving some attention to relaxing the body, calming the body, giving some attention to calming the mind is a part of meditation practice. Not for its own sake, but because when the mind is calm, when the body is calm, it's a lot easier to see into our experience, see what's going on in a more balanced way, in a non-reactive way. It's easier to be a little more equanimous or relaxed about the process of meditation as it continues to deepen. And at some point, the instructions in this list of instructions is, in fact, to let go of our clinging. And it's a lot easier to let go of our clinging when things have gotten softer, more relaxed, we're kind of more tranquil. There's a sense of well-being, a sense of joy. To sit in a sense of well-being in meditation, tranquil, delightful sense of well-being, we feel, it can be very healing for people to feel it here, happy, contented, satisfied feeling, relaxed, really feel you're present here. It's a lot easier then to let go of some of the concerns and attachments we have that have nothing to do with here and now, that have a lot to do with imagination, a lot to do with other times and other places and concerns. They have a lot to do with conditioning, a lot to do with fears that we might have, that we need to hold on. It's a lot easier to let go of those mental attachments when letting go clearly feels like you're letting go into something that feels good. Letting go is not only about letting go of something, but when we let go of something, some attachment, we're also letting go into something. And so if we can let go into something that feels good, your mind's going to be more interested in letting go. If it thinks that letting go lets go into deprivation, into something that feels worse, why would it want to let go? But so part of the function of calming, relaxing the body, of developing some kind of inner sense of well-being as you meditate, is to create an environment, an inner environment, where when you let go of an attachment, you kind of drop more fully or can experience more fully that inner environment of well-being. And as you feel that, it becomes hopefully a positive reinforcement kind of thing, where then maybe you're willing to let go of something else and something else, until eventually you come to the most cherished attachments you have, the things that you're absolutely committed to. No way are those Buddhists going to take that away from me. And no one's trying to take anything away from you, but it comes to a point where you see the most deepest thing that you're attached to, and you see, look at it, you kind of cock your head and you look at it from the vantage point of all this sense of well-being and ease and stillness that you have, and you cock your head and you look at it and say, wait a minute. You know, it's kind of obvious this is not to my benefit to hold on to this anymore. In fact, holding on to this is kind of like an irritant on top of feeling so good. You know, if I could just let go of this attachment, it's obvious I'll let go into even a better feeling. This is like the last thing that's keeping me from feeling really, really good. So it's not an obligation to let go. But but as you do this process of settling, of stilling that meditation involves, it becomes clearer and clearer that it's to your benefit not to hold on anymore. So this is one of the reasons why it's useful to relax, to calm, to cultivate calm as part of meditation practice. So that was a little slice of what I talked about on the retreat. Because on this retreat, we went through during the 14 days of the retreat, we went through the 16 stages of mindfulness of breathing that the Buddha gave in a particular discourse. And it was fun, especially those days where the focus was just relax. The whole day is focused on it.